Well, for many parts of the media, many people in the media, Songezo Zibi and Raz Mzanzi have been the favorite political party. Not surprisingly, he's a former editor of Business Day, but he's a heck of a lot more arrows in his quiver, as you will find out as we converse over the next few minutes. Songezo is the founder and the leader of Raz Mzanzi. Good to see you, Songezo. Are you in parliament or is it a remote parliament or how does that all work? Because I know for you to be an MP is different.
Yeah, no. Thanks for having me, Alex. So I am at home actually in Centurion. So I commute between Centurion and Cape Town every week when parliament is on, as it is now until the 18th of September. I typically leave on Monday. And I return either on Thursday night or Friday morning if I don't have any business. Now, that's a theory. The reality is that because my committee is a very busy committee and it's a standing committee, usually I deal with committee business on Monday and on Friday as well. So I actually have a 5-day working week and very little of the constituency period, which is a theory, which is on Mondays and Fridays you go and see constituents. So I try and mix things up.
Explain that, the standing committee, just assuming that everybody, not everybody, but many people who watching this or listening to this don't know how Parliament works.
Yeah, so Parliament sits on Tuesday to Thursday and committees are in the morning, 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock, then there's lunchtime, and then at 2 p.m. until 5 is the big sitting. Sometimes it's up to 8 p.m., depending on the issues that are on the order paper, which is the agenda of the National Assembly. Most committees sit on Tuesday. Wednesday is Cabinet Day. Thursday is Caucus Day, which means political parties in the morning get to discuss their own business. There are a few standing committees in Parliament. The Standing Committee on Public Accounts, which is my committee that I chair, which looks after government expenditure. There is a standing committee on the Auditor General, Appropriation, which is processing the budget, and Finance. Those committees don't have the luxury of meeting on a Tuesday only. The reason they are standing is that on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, you are supposed to work. So that's what I mean by, we mix things up. In the theory of how Parliament is supposed to work, Monday is supposed to be Constituency Day, so you're not in Parliament, and Friday is supposed to be Constituency. But if you're in a standing committee, the Monday, the Fridays off are a luxury.
Okay. Raz Mzanzi, the name to start with, and why you in politics?
So, me being in politics had a lot to do with my career, Anik. I mean, I've got a personal history where in my family, almost everyone was and is in the ANC, right, since I was a kid. But that's not actually why I got into politics. So there were some experiences that I had, good and bad, that took me to politics. But the most profound was when I was editor of Business Day. But during the course of my career, I worked at Volkswagen at the beginning of the Motor Industry Development Plan. I was doing my third year communication from what was then P Technicon, and they took me on as an intern. I eventually got a job. I saw the factory and Yutne, which is Kariakha now, and Port Elizabeth, which is Nelson Mandela Bay, transformed significantly because of what I would term good politics and decent policy. I then left Volkswagen and went into mining, and I saw what bad policy looks like and what it does, right? And then I became a journalist at the Financial Mail for a year, and I saw the other side. And that other side, which was being closer to the politics and what really happened. And I had a complete picture. And my editorship at the Business Day was during the state capture years. And I was left reeling. I couldn't believe how much looting and gangsterism there was in politics. And it's then that it occurred to me that we can't always write about what's going wrong. Some of us have got to step forward and try and fix it. And that's effectively, although it took nearly another decade, you know, that for me to actually get involved, maybe 5 years for me to get involved in politics, because I went and worked for APSA. I saw no ho-hos there when I was there. Not what APSA was doing, but what the clients were doing, because we were intersecting with these corporates and individuals who were looting, and we're having to exit them and report them to the FIC and that kind of thing. Then I became convinced, if good people don't step forward, the country is going to collapse. And that's why it's how I got into politics.
But why your own political party? Why not ANC? As you say, you were hard-boiled in the ANC through your family.
So, you know, I was actually not, you know, interestingly, I was not hard-boiled in the ANC person. My introduction to politics was through the PAC, which our political opponents took advantage of, by the way. When I was a kid, I was like 14, 15, because in the dormitory where I stayed when I went to boarding school, everybody was in the PAC. So, you know, you go with your buddies. So I was never really felt and covered into the ANC at all, like tethered to the ANC like that. My family were, but I never had this difficulty about not being involved in politics through the ANC. As a result, I was never a member. I was never involved with any of their satellite organizations, student or otherwise. That was not an issue. What I did do, together with others, was to explore for years joining the DA, whether I should join the DA. We looked at the ANC, and we thought that's a lost cause. We're like, okay, the logical thing to look at is the DA, because that was a party that was coming up, lots of black leaders and so on. But I felt that it needed to do what Labour did in the UK in Tony Blair and Peter Mandelson's time. Occupy the South African political center. And you don't do that without shifting. So in other words, they would need to shift to center-left. And I felt that if the DA did that, it would become an attractive proposition. And I think it was well on its way into going into that direction. But I felt that its internal dynamics hampered that progress. And I still believe so. And I still believe that it has significant potential if it were to do this evolution to find voters where they are, rather than trying to convince them to come over. That takes longer, with a lot of damage in between. And so we ended up with a political party that we felt, with the ANC's decline, somebody needs to occupy the space that DA refuses to occupy.
And the funding? There's a lot of controversy around there. Harry Oppenheimer's granddaughter or granddaughters who helped you along the way?
The one, by the way. Look, I mean, you know, the funding thing is really interesting, because I think there is a certain trajectory to new political parties that people have become familiar with. They must struggle for money. They must do all of this. Look, to be honest with you, I utilize two things to fundraise money. One is my relationships that I've had from many years in working for large corporates and being an editor. So I've got a significant black book, a forward. So I could phone people up and that sort of. The second thing, though, is that I also spend a lot of time in capital raising, because I work for listed companies. So you learn how to make your case. Learn how to make your case and try and convince people to believe in the same vision. And in South Africa, there's this belief that, you know, donors come to you and they choose you, they manipulate you and that sort of thing. And the relationship with Rebecca, and she's not been our only donor. We've had quite a few, but she's obviously given the most in single amounts to us. Was actually a really, she's an exceptionally smart person. She's exceptionally patriotic about South Africa. She's been deeply respectful of the distance you need to keep between the political party and its donors and so on. And we have incredibly respectful a sort of conversations with her. And it's been the same with others large. But people didn't expect us to get support. And this was shocking to them. The second thing is, we were appealing to people that would have kind of supported the ANC and supported the DA. And so, and the pie isn't so big. So you know, there was a bit of jealousy in between. So I never took it personally, Alec, to be honest with you. I understood it in the context of competition and politics, and, you know, you take the good with the bad and you keep moving.
It is very interesting. I know the family quite well from a different route in the horse racing industry, which I was very involved in. And Mary, who I suppose would be the matriarch now that Bridget's passed, is so publicity shy, it's almost painful. And I'm sure from the whole family to lift their heads above the parapet and to do what they've done in supporting political parties, not just yours, but others across the board, must have taken a lot of reflection. And I'm sure because I knew that they would be almost a magnet for criticism.
Yeah. And we had to think about that too in deciding whether we accept Rebecca's assistance, right? Because she's donated significantly to us. I mean, in each of the window periods, she's given us 15 million rand, which is a lot, right? I actually know Mary, we've met, and I agree with you. She's not the kind of person who, she's not flashy. She can walk past you and you wouldn't know, you know, from just seeing, and she's incredibly humble as well, I felt. But Rebecca understood and understands where the country is and the kind of people that need to be in politics. And that if people with her means do not step forward and help people like myself and my colleagues who've left lucrative careers to do the right thing, if there is no help, then the country gets nowhere. And we discussed the issue of publicity and the arrows that would be thrown at her and so on. And she said, look, we all have to step up at some point. And I'm choosing to step up in this way.
Good for her.
And I'm really grateful and proud of you for doing that.
Why you, Songezo? What was it about your elevator pitch that resonated?
Look, what I would say with both, I mean, even with the people that ended up not helping us with money, I think the one thing that, at least as feedback that people gave me and gave my colleagues, is that we were genuine. We meant what we're saying. And we really wanted to do it, and we're in it for the right reason. And we're very transparent about what we stoop for. We really, I mean, our proposals, Alec, were fairly detailed, especially in the beginning, about what we stood for, how we're going to develop policy, what sort of long-term outcomes we wanted for South Africa. So the vision was, and I believe still is, compelling, right? And that's what it was. But I also have to say, having surrogates who can vouch for your character is also important. And so there were lots of people who were able to do that. People who've got credibility in society, either in business or politics or in civil society, who would pick up the phone and say, listen, you don't know this guy, but I've known him for many years. Please hear him out. And I think what he wants to do is worth listening to. And I hope that you can help him and his colleagues. So there are lots of people that I'm really grateful for doing that.
And it is a real feather in your cap, knowing the media industry as I do, that people in the media industry who tend, I won't say always, but often, to try and make themselves feel bigger by making others in the industry feel smaller, that they came out universally almost in support for you. So they know you and they've given you the thumbs up. And as you say, also with people in business as well. But there was one issue that certainly must have hurt your votes in many areas of society. And that was your apparent endorsement for expropriation without compensation. Just unpack that for us. Was this all about politics?
It was, and I must say the DA was quite smart in spotting the gap. And I think, in my view, kind of pushing the envelope between being aggressive and engaging in disinformation, I would say. And it's very simple. And I have kind of gone to a lot of spaces like the, you know, MCA Kerk and so on to talk about this. And here is our full story, Alec, and it's not long. When land was confiscated from black people, either in the 1700s or 1800s or even the 1900s, there were far fewer of us. South Africa was largely rural, fewer people in the cities, and so on. South Africa has more people now. which means even if you were to restore land to the to those families that owned it at some point, you will soon be left with a lot of landless people. Secondly, South Africa is urbanizing in a chaotic way. And when people move to the cities, they often will occupy unacquired land because there's nowhere else to put up a shack, right? We pretend this is not happening, but it's the most prevalent land occupation pattern in South Africa. So what must you do if you're a government that respects the fact? You recognize that, listen, land restitution is maybe in the past. Access to land and land justice is possibly the thing you should be doing. So in other words, you say, listen, we can't give you the same piece of land that you did because there's now a town. We will devise some other mechanism, either we pay you or some other form. Secondly, you recognize that it's not okay that every time people are landless, they go and occupy Annex land and Songezo's land and Nosipo's land and so on, and they've got to go to court. And so, no, listen, let's not. Let us recognize the problem. Expropriate the land with what is allowed in the Constitution. Do spatial development properly. Put bulk infrastructure properly so that at the rate at which South Africa is urbanizing, you're also able to allocate land. I worked in mining, Anek. The people that are most unhappy with the mining industry about land is not black people, it's farmers. Why? Because the South African government and mining companies work together to expropriate the land. The farmers become unhappy because evaluation is not what they're looking for, but the law is what it is. They get paid fair value and the mine is built. Right? Farmers will tell you in Mpumalanga, in Limpopo, in the Northwest and so on, all the mines were portions of farms before. They've been expropriated. If we can do that within the same constitution to build mines and dams and roads and that sort of thing, why can't we do it for housing? That's all we were saying. So we're not saying expropriate without compensation. We're saying expropriate within the law, pay fair value, and do spatial planning properly so that you don't have this chaos that we have now. That's it.
I think things get lost in translation, and certainly with the complexity, as you've outlined there. What about the complexity of politics? You've now moved in. You've got a brand new, fresh party. I know you're ambitious, and I know you are focused. So next election, you'll probably have more members of parliament or people locally. But just from your perspective, joining the government of national unity, what motivated you in that regard?
Sure. It was a hard decision. We joined late because, look, to be honest with you, you have to think carefully before getting into a relationship that involves the ANC. So we really had to like have a proper conversation. And we had a conversation with them in stages. But there were some principles that had nothing to do with party politics, but with the country. I recognized immediately that with no one getting a majority, things we used to take for granted, such as money bills, would now be subject to contestation and they might not go through. So we need to create a cooperative mechanism that gets the basics of governing done. And you can't do that by saying, you know, I'm going to fight the ANC and the DA because they were our opponents and so on. Let's get together for the things that matter. And that meant we need to have a president who forms a government. You need a speaker and a deputy speaker. That was part one of the conversation. Part two of the conversation was, we want to be effective. We want to show to South Africans what we do when we get elected. And so we want to play a very serious role in parliament. But you, as the ANC, the guys who approached us, you need to tell us why you want us in the GNU. Because if you don't know why you want us there, then we shouldn't be. And they said two things. One, your manifesto is social democratic like ours. People don't trust ours, but I think they trust you guys. To say, if we were to say the same thing, you know, they wouldn't believe you, but they might believe you. But we want the same things from a social justice perspective. And the second thing is they said, we recognize that So again, voters are fed up with the ANC and playing games, and they want us to work. So, you know, no long-term commitments. Let's give this a chance. We will support you to play a serious role in parliament, and we won't interfere with your work. And that was the deal. And that's where we've ended up with me as chairperson of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts. And last thing I want to say is, even though we threw, you know, a lot of punches at one another, at the ANC, at the DA, and so on, one of the things I learned, at least from the American politics of old, when the election is over, recognize that the voters want a government that works. I can't carry on with John about, you know, the fact that he said that why are we coming to the Western Cape. I mean, that was an election time thing. I haven't raised it. It's not necessary to raise it. Let's serve the South African people now and show them that democracy works. Otherwise, the crooks win in their argument to say democracy doesn't work and you need a dictator like Zuma.
We've seen the rand improve from around 1950 to around 1750, give or take a few cents either side, as the government of national unity has held. What's your view? You were now putting back your editor of Business Day cap and you were writing a leader about the rand into the future. What's your prognosis for a continuation of this very welcome trend?
I would say I am. So there was another trend, by the way. So I have a small stock portfolio and I watched it appreciate. Okay. And I was actually talking to one of the journalists and I was giving him updates to say it's gone up by X amount now and so on. So there was a period where equities were also improved. And I had a meeting with the finance minister, by the way. And I said to him, you know, the one thing I learned from working for listed companies is that clarity of the pathway or the strategy is important. Showing that you've got the people to execute on that strategy is important. But more importantly is momentum. You need to show momentum. What this government cannot do is to lose momentum. So you need to signal, present, and update. Signal, present, update. Signal, present, update. So you got to do that. So even as the rand improves, Alec, it should be, if we were doing that, it should be at 16 rand. It should be at 16 rand. It should be at 15 and a half. And the GNU, and I think it's the nature of politicians, and I know I am one, they don't quite understand how the market thinks. You know, and I think we can do a heck of a lot better, but we're not. So, but I'm glad about the trend, I have to say. I'm cautiously optimistic, but I think we can do better, Anek.
So the execution thus far, and it's only a few months, has been good. Are there any reasons for optimism that it will continue in this way?
Yes. Look, I mean, the three anchors of the GNU are the IFP, the DA, and the ANC. And they appear determined to make it work. And I think that's a good thing. There are people who think that the ideological issues are, you know, supersede everything. No, we wouldn't have the miracle if Madiba didn't want to work with Clegg. Sorry. You know, sometimes in a party, in a country's life, you are challenged to work with people you don't like or you don't 100% agree with, as long as it's good for the people. And I think the ANC and the DA and the IFP at this stage are willing to make it work, and the other political parties as well. I believe that if I do a really good job as chairperson of SCOBE, holds the government accountable for what it does with the public purse and so on, it will actually be good for the GNU. Voters will say, you know what? Actually, this kind of works where nobody wins. And so, you know, we might force them to work together again. This is the choice in a democracy that voters should have. So, I'm very optimistic. We've got people who are looking at it with the right attitude. But we need to push one another to do better and do more and do it faster.
Were you surprised at being offered such an important portfolio?
I wasn't offered. I had to fight for it. Do you know that 24 hours before the election, we actually didn't have the votes? We had to lobby everybody, including NK, by the way. So the ANC wanted me to chair appropriation. And I think that was a factor of the finance minister, given his job, and my background and so on. So he kind of really pushed. And there were a few instances where they kept saying, no, no, appropriation. I said, no. I want either finance or the Standing Committee on Public Accounts. And so I started lobbying hard, all of us and my colleagues and everybody else. I spoke to John in the DA. John was lovely. He said, yeah, yeah, no, no, it makes sense. We'll support you. Spoke to MK. And MK were like, okay. But they didn't object at the vote. So the big one was the ANC. And at around 5 o'clock the day before, Malula eventually called and said, okay, fine. We'll support you. Honor has got to count for something at some point. So we'll support you. And no, no, it wasn't offered. And it was like a move.
But it's also such a positive part as a South African to see that so many of those old tales, those old legends, those old myths perhaps, and perhaps they were relevant when you had an ANC over 50%, but they've now been shattered. And for you to be shining a light on the way government spends its money, not being an ANC person, wow. But just to kind of, as we come closer to the end of this conversation, so Gesa, what's your take? You don't have anybody in the, you don't have a dog in the fight, but on what's going on in Gauteng in particular and Tshwane specifically right now?
I live in Tshwane, Alec. So there are two things about Gauteng quickly. The first is that I must tell you again, for our chairperson to be an MEC in the Gauteng government was a hard decision, because the Gauteng government historically has had some problematic characters. Let me be gentle and say that. And those characters are still there. But the thing about voters is they give you the outcome that you get. And we noticed a lot of hunger in Gauteng and the agriculture portfolio, which has an impact on people being able to produce their own food, was something we thought we can do. But I was very clear to Panyaza that if we see any funny business, we are out of there. At the top of our head, we'll be out of there. So if Wiswa is left alone to do her work and deliver, then you can go and brag about it. But if you, then it's an issue. But at a provincial level, you've got problems, right? On which the ANC needs to prove themselves that they are different people in this term. They haven't even begun. Second thing is, it's not just Tshwane, the city of Johannesburg. I mean, it's a disgrace what's happened to Johannesburg. It's an absolute disgrace. It should be the jewel of the African continent. And it's in a mess. I live in Tshwane. If I told you how much I pay for water still on the basis of incorrect billing, your eyes would water. What we need, though, is for this realignment to complete at local government. In my view, is it's a good thing, actually, if we don't have a majority, but you need consolidation of political parties so that you don't have 13 political parties being part of a council, but 5 or 6. And we are actively talking to other political parties ourselves about consolidating ahead of 2026 and 2029 so that South Africans have sort of fewer choices, but good people within those environments.
Sure, that's a big statement. Who are you talking to?
So we've actually started working with Good. So one of our guys is a Good counselor. So we've started a sort of a dual membership conversation. We're talking to Musi, we're talking to Action SA, and so on, to Bosa, let me not say Musi, but Musi and I sit next to each other in Parliament. And we've had this conversation where we said, hey, listen, let's talk about how we cooperate in 2026 and 2029. We don't need to cannibalize one another's supporters, areas. Let's try and put the best foot forward. Action SA are in that game. We are in that conversation as well. We're not going to rush anything, but we think consolidation is important for the future, and we are going to do it in good faith.
But the way that Action SA is behaving in Tshwane right now, certainly the feedback that most people are getting is that they're being irresponsible. Is this accurate?
I don't know. You know, we're not in that council. I wouldn't say this as a general statement. I think within the former, I usually say moonshot. It was no longer moonshot. It was the moonshot. the term will come to me. There's a lot of hurt, Anek. There's a lot of hurt because there were many unequivocal statements made about never working with the ANC and so on. And, you know, as soon as the election happened, the DA was like, cheers. We'll talk to those guys now and so on. So I do think there is an element of that. I don't want to get into their heads. That's why I'm saying maybe we shouldn't rush anything, all of us. Let's just heal. And I often say it's not a good idea to make big decisions while you're grieving. You need to give it. And I think also they shouldn't rush, I don't think.
Last question. We've got local government elections coming up just around the corner, it feels, 2026. And then the next national and provincial elections, not long after that, a couple of years after that. Where's Rise Mzansi's trajectory from here?
So the one good thing out of this election is that we now know which type of areas our voters are. We have no idea. You know, Helen would say it's white South Africans. It's actually not. I would say it's professionals in the public and private sector. It's typically young families. So a lot of these areas with cluster homes, townhouses and that kind of thing, we get a lot of support and that kind of thing. It's largely in the metros and so on. We contested a by-election 187 in Johannesburg. We want to be a double digits party. We got 10% there. So we're going to be very choosy about where we contest. We want the sort of voters that we know, especially in the early days, that are going to give us the kind of the return. And this one, a by-election that we did, gave us 10%. For a new party like ours, PR seats or proportional representation seats are the way to go in the beginning. The EFF did that, Action SA did that, and that's what we'll do. And I think if we were to aim for 10% of the wards we contest, it gives us a decent showing in Johannesburg, Tshwane, and Ekurhuleni. And then we can build on from there in terms of national support for 2029. But by then, hopefully, we'll be part of some form of consolidation. If everything goes well, and then it won't just be Rise Mzansi, it will be Rise plus plus plus.
Fascinating insights. So Sangeso, there's no question that you are a great addition to the body politic. We look forward to talking with you more in future and to watching the progress of both your party and the consolidation that you've spoken about. So Sangeso Zibi is the founder and leader of Rise Mzansi. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.